chapter is called the Scripture of Pancreas Food of Activities. And this is following a discussion where one Kapila is speaking about the, or is explaining the potency of devotional service, and there's very much reference to the aspect of time, as Devahuti had earlier requested in the 29th chapter for Kapila to speak about this time fact that seems to be pushing everything to change continuously on a professional level, on a mutual platform. And Lord Kapila explains this time effect as an energy of the super soul, a manifestation of course directly Krishna. Time is not different from Krishna in one sense, as Krishna is allowing things to take birth, go through the different changes, and ultimately change from one body to the other, transmigrating from one body to the next. So time forces matter to change continuously. So of course Krishna is the owner of that aspect of time. So this has been discussed by Kapila Deva Devahuti, and part of understanding the time factor is that we do not become fearful of time. We're not fearful of Krishna if we're acting under his umbrella, because by the same prospect, by the same aspect of time, we will be pushed to our eternal family in Goloka Vrindavan, which is what is being explained in this text. So if you focus on what's been said here, it speaks about the materialistic family conception of life. And a very strong opening statement by Srila Prabhupada that it is easier to maintain a great empire than it is to maintain a small family. Does anyone disagree? Or does anyone find this to be an extremely bold statement? I can imagine some people will hear an empire that's, you know, an empire is not just situated in one place. It's, you know, like the Roman Empire, you conquer here, conquer there. The Mughal Empire. So many empires have come and gone, and we've conquered vast lands and dominated and controlled people, resources, etc. And here Prabhupada explains that it is easier to maintain that than it is to maintain a small family, especially in Kali Yuga. So you have to put it in the context of Kali Yuga, where everyone pretty much is always harassed by some living entity or the other. Any of the Adi Adhika, Adi Devika, Adi Bhautika kleshas are always harassing the living entity. So there's a lot of distress walking around with each and every single living entity. Past karmas, the interaction of the modes, and the interaction of us with other living entities who are suffering the threefold miseries. So there's a lot of anxiety, and this verse speaks a lot about how the living entity who is misplaced and who has a misconception that they are the body that they are inhabiting at the moment, they become full of anxiety because they're trying to make a permanent situation in a temporary world. And this permanent situation permeates through this contact between man and woman, which results in, most of the time, sex life, expansion, family, expansion of the family into the different resources, the houses, the wealth, the relatives, etc. So one develops that attachment in anything that tries to hinder the prospects of enjoying these different expansions from oneself. It causes a lot of anxiety. It causes a lot of strife. Lots of wars have been fought because people are claiming dominion over fields of activity, fields of enjoyment. Whether it's the sea, whether it's a desert, whether it's a little ocean or a little island here or there, there's a lot of violence that is committed to try to claim control over these territories. And this stems from the false notion of proprietorship as well, thinking that we are the masters of what we survey at the moment. So this morning when I was driving here, I was listening to Elesh Kali's homeless Randa Swami, and he was speaking about how he went to India for the first time when he was 19, and he was staying in the forest, and he was observing monkeys. And he was seeing how the monkeys behave, how they become extremely territorial with what they survey, even if it's just a tree that they will live under for a few hours. They become filled with anxiety to protect their property, even if it's a tree or a branch. So they have to defend their tree. They are in anxiety that no other male monkey comes to attack or take away the she, the female, and that the children do not fall prey to others. So there's a lot of anxiety. And the other anxiety is that no one comes in between his fulfillment of other desires, and hence he carries more than one she monkey as a wife or whatever they call each other. So even we see with the monkey, there's a lot of anxiety to maintain society, friendship and love, even for the monkeys. Now we could say we are monkeys living in a concrete jungle, because we do the same thing. And when I say we, I'm talking generally. I'm not calling anyone a monkey, nor am I professing that, anything like that. I'm generalizing that in the material world, there's great determination to also become territorial with our bodies, become territorial with the places that we reside in, our habitats, which is our wealth. We're expanding in different ways, whether it's our children, our wives, or husbands, and our name and our fame. And we become very vigilant of anything that might come to obstruct our enjoyment of all these things that we have expanded. So just like the monkey, we become territorial, right? We put so many systems to secure ourselves. We put so many passwords and codes. No one should enter. Trespassers, you know, at all risk. Beware of dog, or whatever it might be. The deep-rooted mentality is that this is mine. I am the controller, and I am the lord of what is in this field of enjoyment, this kshetra. So we become territorial, and we defend our sense of enjoyment. So living our life in such a way, we become baffled, because as time goes on, the aspect of time quickly shows us that these things will be taken away, these things that we are striving to keep permanently with the aspect of time, they slowly keep changing and they dwindle. This is just the reality. So why spend the rest of our human life trying to make a perfect situation out of that which is asat, that which is temporary? So when I was listening to this in the morning, I was thinking, this is very true. Human beings also behave like this in Kali Yuga. This is how human beings behave. In order to maintain a family or a society, so many measures are taken. Even on a national level, on a global level, we see what happens when you try to maintain society. So many wars are fought, so many lives are lost. Right? Someone is bombing Syria, someone is bombing Afghanistan, someone is bombing Libya, someone is bombing Nigeria. It's happening all over the place. Right? And this is it's a territorial thing. You know, get out of our nations, this is our land, get out, leave our resources, these are our resources meant for our enjoyment, etc., etc. Of course, I'm not saying that it's great that people are being bombed, I'm just saying the principle there behind the perpetrators is that they want to control certain areas, and therefore lives are being lost under such foolish leadership. Right, recently Donald Trump dropped the mother of all bombs, toxin, drop these MOABs, and people are dying. To prove a point that you do not mess with the United States of America. Yet when a cyclone or hurricane comes, what can missiles do? When Mother Nature retaliates, what can advanced technology do to stop natural disasters? And sometimes when I think there's so much focus on the negative aspect of the material world, but simultaneously as we see the material world for what it is, we develop a deeper appreciation for Krishna, the person, we develop our relationship with Krishna. But we have to also understand the reality of the material world, that it is not a fun fair, it is not a fun place to be in. And we are not that powerful, even with our advanced technology. As I mentioned, when nature reacts, there's nothing we can do. When this body that we do not control reacts, when it stops to function in terms of the hearing capacity or in terms of vision, sometimes there's nothing we can do. When the cells start eating, attacking the body, there's nothing we can do. We don't have that much control. So it gives us an understanding of the nature of material existence. In order for material existence to continue, actually, there has to be a level of envy, because envy is what sometimes pushes people to strive. That person has much more than me, I'm going to work even harder to get more than what that person has. You become envious of people's possessions, material possessions, although they're flickering at every moment. So people spend lives, energy, time, and effort to try to be the controllers and to try to fulfill the needs and the desires of family, society, nation, etc. But these are futile attempts. When we remove Krishna from any equation, whether we remove Krishna from understanding how he has given this body or this universe, it becomes a very miserable affair. The knowledge is not complete. And Krishna explains in the Bhagavad Gita that real knowledge means you understand matter, spirit, and the control of both of these energies. So we have to understand who Krishna is. Krishna is the controller of both. The material energy also belongs to Krishna. So we should understand the material energy, appreciate what it does, and divert our attention to Krishna's internal plenipotency. Because that is our natural disposition, that is our natural constitutional position, to become a servant of Krishna. Now when we see nature, we can appreciate this opulence of Krishna. In the 12th canto, it speaks about the different types of gurus we can see in nature. We can observe the ocean and its depth. We can observe the tolerance of the tree, how it stands in different weathers, rain, sunshine, whatever happens, the tree stands and tolerates everything. We can observe the pigeon. We can observe the mountains. We can observe so much in nature and see Krishna's potency in it. And in that way, we develop a loving appreciation for the personality Krishna by appreciating his external manifestation and how it works to give us that realization. Not that we become extremely depressed, oh, the material world, oh, people die, this is happening, etc. Yes, that is there, but also let's use the positive outlook to propel us. We want to be propelled by positivity, not by negativity. Initially, in the beginning, Nectar of Devotion is explaining that when the sadhaka approaches or accepts the process of hearing and chanting, there's a great relief of material miseries. And that is called klishagni. When we feel this weight of material life slightly slackening, and there's all auspiciousness that comes, we start experiencing Krishna's mercy, because now the veil is being slowly removed, the fog is cleared up, we can start seeing life for what it is. And that way we start appreciating Krishna. Like I mentioned, this purport begins by saying it is easier to maintain a great empire than it is a small family. And this we're talking about, you know, like a nuclear family. What goes in, what we have to acquire, you know, relating with relatives, relating with other bodies around us. There's a lot of confusion, thorns and pebbles along the way. Right, an empire, you're your own boss, everyone is subservient. You rule the land and you prosper and people respect you and praise you, etc. In that sense, it is very easy. An example would be great. It is very easy. You're a chef, you're a ruler, you show your prowess and all these things and everyone follows suit, the great pharaohs or the kings. But when you're in a family situation, because everything is so close, the wife is pulling this way, the husband is pulling this way, the children are pulling you this way, material desires are pulling you that way, mom and dad are pulling you this way, so everyone is getting a piece of you. Whereas when you're in a grand, when you're in an empire, everything is, people are so far removed from you because there's that awe and reverence. Right, you only have your clothes, your friends, your allies around you, and everyone will say what you want to hear. They will just want to prep you because they're getting the benefit of being close to the king or whatever. And if they don't conform, they put it out. See you later. So everyone sucks up to you and says what you want to hear, in one sense. But when you're in a close-knit situation, everyone gets a piece of the pie. Like you're being pulled in so many different angles. So it becomes very difficult to navigate. You get sidetracked very easily. So in that sense, it can be very, very difficult. Because the qualities of Kali Yuga also are raining very hard on the living entity. Attention span is so low. The mind is always disturbed. The senses in general are always disturbed. What you speak of having clear vision, we are always disturbed. Someone steps on your toe, they punch you in the face. But you cut someone off or you're traveling, and I'm a careful driver, I don't want to cause any accidents. So I follow the speed limit. If it's 40, I'll be driving at 40. If we're on the freeway at 4:15 a.m. and there's roadworks, it says 40. Trust that I will be driving at 40. But you have people who are very impatient. You'll be driving at 40 and they will zoom past you and blah, 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 all sorts of things. And I'm thinking, it's so early in the morning and you're so angry. What's going on? Small, small things, insignificant things provocate. You sit on a train, you might kind of shove a person by mistake, and you get like a death stare. You know, you touch me. What is this? So, the level of disturbance is very high. The tolerance span is very, very short. There's hardly any patience and tolerance these days. So on top of the fact that Kali Yuga as an age has degraded the consciousness, the potency of the physical body as well, now we bring all these subtle elements too, all these qualities that should come natural in a civilized human civilization. All these qualities are being diminished by the progress of the age of Kali. So it becomes very, very difficult to actually just go on in a materialistic family setting without being full of anxiety. There'll always be that anxiety factor. So following the purport, it explains that the family situation we find in this material world is a perverted reflection of the family in Krishna Loka. Now, of course, we know the five primary rasas, of course, Madhya Rasa, Vatsalya, Shanta Rasa, Sakya Rasa, and what's the big one? Das. So we can see the perverted reflection of most of these less than human material world. You know, there's a man and woman relationship, and when it's fun, the majority of people who have that rasa, whether it's man, man, woman, whatever, but that rasa is there, that sadhya rasa is there, sakya rasa, that is there. All these relationships are there, but they're in their perverted form. And hence, in this purport, Prabhupada mentions that the family that we maintain is created by mana. Now, this is not a license for everyone here then to go and go back and reject your parents. You are Maya, I'm Maya, you're Maya, everything is Maya, we're all in Maya. That's not the point. The point that's being made here, towards the end of the sentence, Prabhupada mentions that they are eternal. In Krishna Loka, they are also family, friends, return. This is in particular to our eternal family. They are also family, friends, society, father and mother. Everything is there, but they are eternal. So Maya means that which is not. So this family that I have right now, in terms of the physical body that they have right now, this is not their eternal swarup. This is not our eternal swarup right now. You're my wife, I'm your husband, you're my sister, etc. We've had many husbands, many wives in different species of life. And these are all created by the external energy. If we look at it deeply, the material energy creates, or we associate with the material energy and we take the material body to be us. To be, this is me, I am black, I'm a woman, this is me. But that is a temporary understanding. This is a temporary body. It's not eternal. Therefore, this life right now, this is not my eternal constitutional position to be a black girl from Botswana. In my previous life, I could have been Dutch. I could have been German. Could have been an ant. Right? Could have. I could have been an ant, or a bear, or a wolf, or a ghost. Who knows? This is just temporary. So when we go with our temporary understanding and inject that temporariness into another living entity, let's live a temporary life and have temporary exchanges based on an illusory aspect of the real self, then we're continuing a downward spiral of thinking that we are the body. And when we live with the understanding that we're just the material body, then when the time factor hits us, we become extremely fearful. Now, fear is a very necessary quality of materialism. Materialism is filled with fear. We have to be fearful because we don't want the time factor, because the time factor takes away pleasure. It takes away vision. It takes away the ability, the potency of all our senses. It takes away our youth. Therefore, we don't want it. We do not want to deal with the aspect of time. But one with a proper vision, proper understanding, full understanding, see that this is just time is propelling us to our eternal destination. And that's why when the devotee goes through all these changes, they're not so hot and bothered by the aging body. Because the body is going to change, that is a fact of life. But we have the knowledge that teaches us that it is not the end of everything, that we are, there is a destination. So if we just have interactions between the opposite sex, in Kali Yuga, most persons will be in a Grihastha type of setting. When we are in that type of unit, then we have to act on some higher knowledge, understand that whatever it is that is around us that we acquire, we have been blessed by the Lord, and we use it accordingly. As Bhaktivinoda Thakur used to say, this house is a kunta, and my wife, my children, they are servants of the Lord. And when we see like that, when we see through Shastra, when Shastra explains to gives us real eyes, and we put it into practice, then this anxiety is reduced and is lessened. But if we try to claim problems when the time factor comes, we're in anxiety once again. When the time factor comes in terms of age, sorry, old age, or disease, or death itself, we're very, very anxious. If anyone has ever been around a person who's dying, who has no knowledge of what's coming next, there's a lot of anxiety. They will ask about their belongings. Have I signed everything? How is this one? Who's going to take care of this one? There's a lot of anxiety of not knowing what's coming next. Although people normally sing this mantra, ignorance is bliss, but actually it's not. No one here would walk into a flight not knowing where it's going. If there's a pilot or not, let's just jump in. Ignorance is bliss. What's in that pilot? I don't care. Let's just eat it. Ignorance is bliss. Yeah, the point that the bomb was, ignorance is bliss. No one behaves like that. Therefore, sometimes people throw out mantras that really don't mean anything. But they just accept it as, yes, ignorance is bliss. It's a great saying. It feels good. But actually, it has no much intelligence, is it, in it? No amount of ignorance will ever be useful. Because you will always worry. Why do you get insurance if the ignorance is bliss? Why do that? Why lock your car if ignorance is bliss? Why put your wallet in your bag? Why toast you? It's just all the ignorant. So there are all these securities because ignorance can never be peaceful. So this understanding of what real friendship society is should be understood with scriptural vision. Not that we need these material eyes, like Bill Amanda the Tarkor. At some point he had no proper vision to see, and Bhaktivinoda Thakur, they didn't have vision, but they could see Krishna. They had spiritual vision. They could see this world for what it is, and they could see the spiritual realm for what it actually is as well. So when you read the pages of Shastra sincerely and openly, we can see what the reality is. You might have a nice youthful body right now, everything is working tip-top shape. But we know, Shastra tells us, the body goes through six different changes. And no one can argue with that. So we live through our life with this knowledge, with the understanding that yes, the body is going to go through six different changes. And I am separate from the body. I am Atma, I am the spirit within the body. And my job in this life is to try to connect with my source, Krishna, by the process of devotional service. So when Lord Vishwadev, in a similar topic to what this text is discussing in terms of the intricacies and anxiety that is produced when a male and female come together in material existence to try to cohabitate. To put it nicely, the attraction between male and female is the basic principle of material existence. On the basis of this misconception, which ties together the hearts of male and female, one becomes attracted to this body, home, property, children, relatives, and wealth. In this way, one increases life's illusions and thinks in terms of I and mine. So this understanding that keeps us bound here into this material world is further perpetuated when we come together in the union without higher knowledge of what that union is actually about. And the proof is there in different faiths. Unions are generally solemnized in a holy institution. You go to a church, you go to a synagogue, you go to a temple for the marriage to be blessed, because God is a factor also in that marriage. Actually, even when you were growing up, when you were doing different nativity plays, etc., the priest would explain to us that, yes, actually we do all these things, but you get baptized, you get holy communion, all these sin, because God is the other person in your life, even in the relationship between you and your spouse or your parents, God is also there. But somehow the enemy seems to forget that point when we're all grown up. We go there for that day, woohoo, wedding bell, tee-hee. And then when you walk out, God is out of the picture. And as soon as you remove Krishna from the equation, even from a marriage institution, which is the Grihastha Ashram in one sense, when you look at it as an institution, it falls under the Vanashram system, which is meant to at least civilize human beings to be able to give them a platform where they can hear about spiritual subject matters. It is meant to organize society. So on that platform, it gives people a stable situation to hear about Krishna. That's what it is meant for. But if the Pumsa in the Striya, this verse in 558, which the Pumsa generally means the male, the dominant one. Striya, as Gopa Manish Prabhu yesterday mentioned, doesn't only mean to expand, but it means female. So it explains that Pumsa in Striya, Mithuni Havan, they come together and propelled by attraction for sex love. Now that just doesn't mean the act itself, it means the expansion of that, which doesn't mean children, home, wealth, etc. All of that stuff. That's what the that's what propels. Yes, when we're kind of want to build another house and another house, that is an extension of sex life. Sex life is not just the act, but there are extensions of it. So both male and female, tayo mitu. So both of them, hidaya granting, they develop a snort in the heart. They develop an attachment. And not developed in the heart, and they all, they act to continue this griha kshetra, this field of activity, the home, relatives, family, society, etc. Jarasya mohoyam ahamaniti. Continuing this, the living beings are put into illusion, especially under the concept of ahamaniti, I and mine. And on this cycle will continue. So when we enter into relationships without Krishna, there's the risk factor is that we will continue with the illusion of I and mine mentality. You are my property, I am yours. And if you listen to a lot of discourse happening these days, especially in the realm of spirituality or religion, people think that with the relationship, with what makes the world go round, the relationship between male and female, that one is trying to control the other. So religion and spirituality is criticized on that platform, that the male is claiming ownership of the female claims ownership of the male, but actually neither is correct, because ultimately, we belong to Krishna. We do not enter a relationship thinking, you are mine, I am yours. The sentiment might be there, you're a unit, okay. You go through life to support each other, great, spiritually. But to think that the other person is your property, that's a false, that's an unhealthy relationship. It should be a partnership in enlightenment. Your partners on the way back home, back to Godhead. And we both are sons of Krishna, we both belong to Krishna. That becomes healthy. So the material world contradicts itself sometimes. What's being spoken about here is that the materialists further do not know that these relationships that they're striving for without purity, in terms of without exploitation, they do not know that they are shadows of the real thing. that there are pure relationships in the spiritual realm. Therefore, their hearts are always burning to have that pure relationship. So we're looking for pleasure in all the wrong places. But it's the nature of the soul to seek pleasure. And who is the reservoir of all pleasure? We chant it every day. Ram is in the mantra. The Lord is the reservoir of all pleasure, and the living entity is seeking pleasure. And our pleasure becomes fulfilled when we connect with Krishna in a relationship. So when we take up the process of Krishna consciousness, we're aiming to re-establish that connection, and that pleasure principle will come as a result of awakening our dormant relationship with Krishna. And oftentimes this is criticized in the material world, although there's so many contradicting mentalities out there that sometimes make it very, very difficult when you're preaching to people. Some people will come here, they'll see Srila Prabhupada, they'll see the deities, and they'll say, nope. They will say, man worship. If they come for a Vyasa Puja, man worship. If they walk in the temple, they see us offering obeisances, man worship. They don't like it. But then if we go back out there and see how they treat important persons like, oh, let's say Bollywood stars or Hollywood stars or musicians, there are entire careers that are dedicated to understanding how did Salman Khan get that body he has? How does he work out? What does Shilpa Shetty do to keep her hair very long and healthy? Oh, Samir Khan, all of these Bollywood, there are entire careers dedicated to trying to understand how these people function. How do they dress? Designers want to dress them, so they want to adorn them. Some I hear have temples where they're worshipped. Sachin Tendulkar has a temple? I read something like that. Where these people are idolized and they are worshipped in different ways, but then they cannot come to the source of everything to offer respect and homage. They see that as idol worship. Yet we worship Bollywood and Hollywood and Nollywood and musicians, etc. So this is very, very, this behavior is very, very contradictory. Because I had a friend who once came to one of our retreats, and the main problem this person had was the bowing down to another man. And I said, what's the big deal, man? It's like, you know, I just find it weird, like, we bow down to people, like, stop with the majesty. And I said, well, you know, there's so many concerts, there's Confest, there's Rock at the Falls, there, you know, so many things. In America, they have this festival in the desert.
Burning Man.
All these things. And, you know, when they see the famous person walk by, it's just like, wow. Like, they really want to touch this person. They want to find out where this person is. They want to take a photo with that person. They want to serve that person. Like, well, we're just doing it for the most attractive person in existence. So take a pic. How contradictory is it? In material existence, what's being accepted as okay is worshipping people's bodies, temporary bodies. But they'll find an issue with worshipping the Supreme Personality of Godhead and His pure devotee. Oh, there are too many rules and regulations. There are too many rules. Speaking of my friend, they'd be like, oh my God, no caffeine. They're just like, oh my God, it's too much. I'm thinking, really? There are no options out there? No more options? You mean to tell me there's no more option in the health shop? Caffeine free stuff, there's no option? They're like, well, there is. Well. Or people will say, you know, it's just, it's too much. So, because we become attached to an illusory way of life, everything else is blurred out. we cannot accept any other lifestyle. But the devotees are very, very tolerant and patient when they go to preach in front. We hear all of this and slowly try to educate people. Well, we know that verse, Titiksava Karmika, Surgidam Savardehinam, the wonderful verse explaining the quality of a sadhu. The devotees are very merciful. Sometimes it requires that we just develop friendships with persons, we listen to them, go on and on. So we become very tolerant, Titiksava Karmika. We become tolerant and merciful. We expose them to the process. We expose them to the chanting, hearing of the holy name. We expose them to prasadam. And that way they're getting a taste. They might take up Krishna consciousness gradually later on. Sarva sarvushana. So the devotees, they go through different situations to try to follow the process, adhere to the scriptures as much as possible, and they develop these sublime qualities and characteristics, and that becomes attractive. People become attracted actually to their devotees. So by following the process itself, we develop this attractive feature, and people wonder, what is it that you do that makes you so calm, so peaceful, so anxiety-free? And then we can share with them, well, this is my lifestyle. This is what I do in the morning. I chant on japa beads, mala. These days, people know the word mala. Even the audience, oh, you chant on mala? Like, yeah, on mala, yeah. That's the word. People are slowly learning the lingo. And you explain to them, yeah, I chant in the morning, but it's quiet, no one's calling me, no one's emailing me, so that's when I do all this stuff. And they're like, well, maybe I should start thinking up early. So slowly like that, they start asking, because your character, your personality is sober, peaceful, tolerant, happy, in Kali Yuga, without intoxication. So that baffles people. Because in this world, some people have personally told me to get by, they have to be intoxicated. They have to take intoxication. Otherwise, it's difficult to deal with the reality of, you know, dealing with the three modes of ritual nature every day. It's difficult, therefore they need some intoxication. But if they know that you're living an intoxicated, free life, they want to know how. What do you do? What can I do? So like this, we can create positive change in people's life, and they will cease from working so hard to try to set aside this false notion of the self, and slowly but surely come to the platform of realizing their non-material self. In all different types of relationships, they will cease to be driven by an illusory aspect and the I and mind mentality. So I'll stop there and I'll ask if there's any comments or questions. Harassed and full of anxiety because of accepting the false connotation of Maya's family. So, Prabhupada here says, especially these days in Kali Yuga, because of the provocations of the age itself, the the qualities of Kali Yuga itself, which are mentioned in the first canto, Manda Sumando Matayo, Manda Bhagya Hi Pagataha, that most of the entities are just disturbed, full of anxiety. So, whether even in your own family, I mean, you cannot imagine horrific stories within the family. So, once, you know, when you're dealing with an empire, you're up there, you're delegating, things are going on, there's a great sense of respect in a monarch situation. Yeah. Most people don't even know what the queen does or whatever, but they'll respect, okay, all hail the queen or the king, whatever it is. There's that aspect of respect. But nowadays, even to your mother, to your father, there is no respect. And that is, in one sense, glorified in the media. There was a case of one girl in America, she's 13 years old, and this girl has been offered so many deals and monetary reward for her bad behavior. So she's being disrespectful to her mother, to people around. I mean, she's only 13 years old, using foul language and acting like she's, you know, she acts like she's figured life, she's crappy, but very disrespectful. And what the world does, like, yeah, this is very funny, ha ha ha, oh, we want to pay you $1 million to appear here, let's pay you $1 million. So she's thinking, oh, I act like this, I get what I want. So, and she's hit her mother, she's stabbed her mother before, she behaves badly. So, in Kali Yuga, there are no bars. It doesn't matter whether someone is your mom or father anymore. So you can see that Kali Yuga is so bad that you don't even know if you're going to be respected by your own child or by your own parents. There are people who swap spouses within the family. It's very strange, isn't it? Very, very strange. Like, oh, that was my husband's wife, now it's the father's wife. Like, it's just weird. So in Kali Yuga, these things are going on. So it's very, very difficult to maintain a proper family because no one knows how to communicate. The children don't know how to communicate. The parents don't know how to communicate. There are aisles and aisles of books about how to have a good child, how to do this with your spouse, there's so many books on relationships because no one knows what to do. No one knows how to discipline their child. I work with children all day, every day. Well, at least 4 days a week. And there are situations where you can tell a child is being abused. Good family, spotless cars, whatever. And you know, you get trained to spot all these things and you wonder, this child is not doing two. What's going on? So in Kali Yuga, things are very, very messy. So it becomes difficult to deal with those situations. So in that sense, you can say, because everything is degraded. Unfortunately. So we have time to get on.
Srimad Bhagavatam that actually even the sages of Satya Yuga desire to take birth in Kali Yuga. Like how why is that? You know, it's so degraded now.
Yeah. What's that verse that explains how there's one good quality in Kali Yuga? Kalo Vijay Rajan
Asti Kumar.
This is what's happening. I don't know what I was doing at this age. Reciting the shloka. Pertaining to your question, yes, great sages, even in Satya Yuga, they want to take birth in Kali Yuga. Why is that? It's such a degraded age. Well, If you're very smart, you can finish up your business very quickly because there is nothing attractive here. Do your job and go. Whereas in Satya Yuga or Treta Yuga, things are, you know, there are many devotees, it's, you could say it's relatively comfortable. All these qualities of Kali, they're very minutely, but they're not pronounced. Whereas in Kali Yuga, it's just like open heart surgery. Everything is just displayed. This is what you go get, this is what's happening, technology shows you everything, social media shows you everything, this is Kali Yuga. Right, so the one who called it, the chanting of the holy name is here, Lord Chaitanya has appeared, but then Lord Chaitanya is still there with Panchatantra and Mayapur. So it's a very, very potent age in the sense that the Lord, the Chana Avatar, Lord Chaitanya is actually not an avatar, he's Krishna himself, has appeared and performed his pastimes, and the mercy of the Goswamis, the Panchatantra, it is still there. And the ISKCON body under Srila Prabhupada is alive. So in that sense, living entities want to take birth here because there is a system set up, you can come and practice very and get out very quickly. Whereas in other ages you might be distracted because the body is stronger, much more beautiful, you know, we have different, everything is not as bad as Kali Yuga. That's the one good thing about Kali Yuga right now is the chanting of the holy name is there. And that is our short ticket out to the highest domain, Goloka Vrindavan. So in that sense, yes, it is. We're very fortunate to have taken birth in a time where Lord Chaitanya has just left. I saw a quote actually by Bhaktivinoda Puno, so I'll finish it before I get just out of this form. Thank you. Someone had asked a question, you know, regarding our eternal swarup in the spiritual world, who's doing our service right now? Because we're here. So, so who's on the roster? Because I'm here doing this right now, and it's a little bit hard. And my brother didn't feel like, so, and he laughed, number one, and said, actually, in the split second that we've been gone, it's a split second. So I can't remember the exact time, but he was able to say, the time that we're here is nothing but a split second in the spiritual time. So really, it's a blink of an eye. So before someone even turns around, we'll be back. It's not that, you know, months are going on and you have not been doing your fruit divide for 2 months. And it's not like that. Time functions very, very differently. So as soon as we finish our business here, our time here works differently as to time in the spiritual world. We'll be back there and they will have just thought we turned around. So, yeah. Okay, last question before I get booted out.
Does the soul have a gender, male or female?
Does the soul have a gender, male or female? We're all female. There's only one Purusha, that's for sure. We're all female, different types of bodies, but there's only one Purusha. Ekala Ishvara Krishna, Arasava Bhritya. There's only one Ishvara, that is Krishna. There's only one male, that is Krishna. Everyone else is Prakriti, female, which means we're meant to be enjoyed. We have different bodies, but it's not such a big deal. Like, there's no feminism and blah, blah, blah in the spiritual world. We're all striving to please Krishna. The body is not a big deal. Everyone has a spiritual body. I'll take it. I don't care what it is. If it's a spiritual flower, a stone, Saishananda Vigraha. So as such, gender, as we see, like man, woman, we're all female, we're all Prakriti, meant to be enjoyed by the one male Krishna, the ultimate Purusha. Okay, thank you very much for your attention.